More on Jim Wallace's peculiar theology next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. Along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman for the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Great to be back with you, Barry.
Well, it's good to be with you today, Chuck. And if our listeners who were with us yesterday are back today, which I hope they are, they know that we were talking yesterday about the Reverend Jim Wallace, who is a very liberal theologian, supposedly of an evangelical stripe, who heads an organization called Sojourners, and who will use the term eisegetes the Bible in order to try to make it say things that just aren't in there, or to overemphasize things that God had counter-emphasis on in other parts of Scripture.
And let's explain the term.
Okay, first let me just say, though, Jim Wallace is one of President Barack Obama's closest spiritual advisors. So just keep that in mind as we talk about this.
The act of eisegesis, there are two ways to read biblical passages, exegetically and eisegetically. Don't misunderstand and try to look up I-S-O-G-E-S-I-S because it's not isogesis. It's I-E-I-S-E-G-E-S-I-S.
Yes.
What that means is eisegesis is the act of grabbing biblical passages and reading things into them that the context of the entire Bible or the chapter around it does not support. And exegesis is an attempt to define what a certain passage says by its context in both the chapter, verse, book, and the entirety of the Bible.
Right. So in other words, keeping it within the confines of its context.
That's it.
Now, you always say something, every once in a while, off air, you'll say it, which is a perfect example of eisegesis, how you can take something and make the Bible say something it doesn't say.
Well, that's Gary DeMar uses this in a book. He says, you can make the Bible say anything. Judas hanged himself, go and do likewise, and what you do, do quickly.
That's right. So you have to be careful, because eisegesis is very dangerous. And it's your favorite term, Chuck, scripted torture.
Yeah, script torture, yeah.
Which I think is pretty hilarious. But Jim Wallace is very, very adept at this type of thinking because he comes at the Bible with a presupposition, and that presupposition is socialism. He believes in redistribution. He believes that socialism, by and large, is biblically tenable. He rails against capitalism. He rails against all of the trappings of capitalism. He rails against conservative evangelicalism. And in this article that we were starting to talk about yesterday, on caring for the poor as government's biblical role, he's specifically railing against the Tea Party. Yes, all of this idea about government being there and their biblical role is to help the poor, which honestly isn't government's biblical role more than it is the family and the church to provide, because in the scriptures that he actually does bring out, what it's really talking about is the kings and the rulers and authorities providing justice and seeing the poor treated similarly to everybody else, which means just society. Well, he would say fair, and that means that they should get preferential treatment, according to Jim Wallace. Fair outcomes does not mean equal outcomes to the sojourn. Well, the big problem, though, Chuck, is as he's saying this, Jim Wallace is very, very, shall we say, skilled in the art of phrasing. And so if you just cursorily read this article, as I believe the gentleman from the American Spectator, Mark Tooley, who did a review of it, read, you could come up with some very wrong conclusions.
Well, I'm going to be quite honest. I'm looking at Mark Tooley's background, and let me put it this way. The fact that he could misinterpret this doesn't surprise me. Because believe it or not, he and Wallace are probably speaking very close to the same language. In fact, you and I are speaking vastly different language than Wallace is. Mark Tooley is the president of something called the Institute on Religion and Democracy in Washington, D.C. I'm assuming it's a nonprofit, some kind of a think tank thing. But he's a Methodist. Okay, folks out there, don't get me wrong. If he's a United Methodist, the United Methodist Church is probably the most liberal, or I think the second most liberal denomination in the United States of America. There are ways to rank that. The first most liberal probably being the United Church of Christ.
Most definitely.
Tooley is a Methodist. Now, he's probably a quote-unquote conservative, whatever that means, swimming upstream in the Methodist Church. Now, there are conservative denominations inside the Methodist Church. So, again, don't get me wrong that all Methodists are automatically liberals. That's not what I'm saying. What I am saying is that the denominations themselves and the teaching that comes out of them tends to lean toward extreme liberalism. And that's where I think Tooley goes wrong. Now, Tooley is also stretching to make a point. Remember that Wallace is talking about something that you and I mentioned on a show a few days ago. And, well, it's not capitalism and it's not communism. It's the third way. And this is that nebulous thing that came out of people who equivocate on what the meaning of communism is, equivocate on what the meaning of capitalism is, because if you get right down to the bottom line, we're not going to explain this. I'm going to throw it out there. Communism is a capitalist system, okay?
Right, right.
And there's a reason for that. All economic systems are automatically capitalist. You have to have capital
in order to operate. That's right.
And the whole idea behind Marxism is you create the capital through a capitalist phase. This is Marxist philosophy. And if you understand this part of it, you understand why it's rank boobery. You create capital during the capitalist phase of an economy's development, and then you go over to a dictatorship of the proletariat where basically everyone is guaranteed a job and you've got all this capital build up, and then suddenly once you have this government becomes unnecessary, you live in this socialist utopia and it's a perpetual motion machine. Once you've built that capital, you don't need any more. No more profit. No more loss. Everybody just takes what they need, does their work. There is a major problem here, Barry. And what Wallace is doing is attempting to run away from the obvious failures of communism. Now, in earlier days, Wallace will tell you right up front that he won't tell you he was a Marxist, but his rhetoric sure was Marxist.
Yes, it was.
Man, if he wasn't a Marxist, I'd be really shocked. But the fact that he knows it doesn't work, as we all know now.
Absolutely. It
doesn't work anyplace. And this third way that he's coming about is, well, it's not really capitalism because it's none of this unparalleled greed. Well, that's not what capitalism, at least what I would call free market capitalism. Now, there are all kinds of capitalism, as we just mentioned. There's Marxist capitalism. You have, like we said, there's socialist capitalism. There's free market capitalism. And the closest thing to the biblical model and what actually Wallace is running away from is free market capitalism with self-regulation. But of course, that doesn't always work. That's why you have to have government to step in and punish those who take that free market idea to its illogical conclusion and you steal from people. Say, well, look, I'm free to do this or that or another thing. No, you must control yourself. You can't say anything to sell anything. You can't tell people that they've ingested rat poison in order to sell them an antidote, if you get what I'm saying.
No, I get exactly what you're saying in that.
There are limits. Now, what we have here in the American Spectator is Mark Tooley, who is making the claim that Wallace actually is talking in constitutional language.
Yes.
In this article. Now, you and I have read this thing front to back. I do not see Jim Wallace taking a constitutionalist stand anyplace.
This is, again, another instance, Chuck, I believe somebody reading in with their presuppositions to get what they hope is a good answer out of it. And I believe Tooley is actually guilty of this by saying, and again, I said, Jim Wallace is very, very skilled in crafting a phrase. And Tooley was drawn into it because he spends a lot of time in his article in the American Spectator, that's spectator.org, and we'll have this article up on our web archive as well. But he spends an awful lot of time talking about all of the comments that Jim Wallace put up there about Romans 13 and saying, okay, true enough, but what he misses, Chuck, is the whole slight, quick flip from the idea of justice to fairness, because that's the hinge upon which the socialist Jim Wallace is able to hang his door. And that is, if you start talking about biblical justice, then you have to look at it and exegete passages in that framework. But he wants to talk about fairness, which is not a biblical concept, and then exegete passages in his construct and presuppositional framework of fairness, which he does not equate to equal outcomes.
Barry, this is exactly why I made that comment about the fact of Tooley's biblical worldview filter.
Yes.
Being as a Methodist. he doesn't recognize where Wallace went off the track here.
No, and it blinds him to the idea to where he comes up with a conclusion in his article, which we'll talk about in a couple of minutes, that is breathtaking in its lack of clarity.
Oh, absolutely. But that's kind of my whole point here, is that Tooley is not qualified, really, to make negative comments on Wallace's bad eisegesis, because it appears that he himself is being eisegetical in his... Now, he doesn't quote the Bible much in this article, but you can read between the lines and say, okay, how are you reading the Bible?
Well, I believe that, again, he wants to see a change of Wallace, and he's trying to almost turn cartwheels that he believes that, and he starts seeing, well, Jim Wallace admits there are limits to government, and that threatens liberty if it's violated. Kudos to him! And he's like a cheerleader for Jim Wallace, and he ultimately is hopefully getting down to the point of, has Jim Wallace turned over a leaf? Is he repudiating the socialism of his younger days for a more, shall we say, mature belief?
Oh, absolutely.
This is the part that's stunning about this whole thing, Chuck. Tooley ends his article, and we're going to continue talking about it a little bit, but he says that ever the survivor, Wallace will try to appeal to them, that is the evangelicals, and speak for them as he potentially evolves, get this, into possibly a more truly post-ideological religious activist. Now, I'm not sure how many qualifying phrases you can use in one sentence and not get zapped by the language police, but he's potentially evolving into possibly a more truly post-ideological religious activist. Maybe.
Well, listen, let's give Tooley credit, because he caught the same thing we caught about this thing on Romans 13. Mm-hmm. He said, as and is designed to protect from the evil and promote the good, Wallace recalls the biblical admonition to pay taxes. He also criticizes critics who disparage government per se to see government and as the central problem in society. Remember, we picked this out too yesterday,
right,
which is, quote, simply not a biblical position, end quote. But few conservatives, even the Tea Partiers, much less most evangelicals, dispute this Pauline view of government. There is no disagreement that government must provide police, courts, military, and to provide other essential services for which civil society is not equipped. Exactly. Nobody's, apart from a relative few fringe anarchists. Nobody is, but what Wallace is doing is attempting to say, anybody that's in the Tea Party is an anarchist. No, we want smaller government. We don't want no government.
Well, and he's equating the idea. Well, what he's trying to say is, if we don't leave government the size that it is, then the poor suffer. That's Jim Wallace's entire meme, is everybody's decrying the size of government. Well, if they had their way, they would shrink government to the size of a bathtub, and therefore there would be no help for the poor whatsoever. But honestly, Charles, and if you look at some of the things that you and I have looked at over time, if you did reduce government's role in many of these agencies, especially taxing individuals at prohibitive rates, you see more charitable giving. As a matter of fact, those who are believers are, by and large, the most charitable individuals in the country. And if fewer taxes had to be paid, more could be given to charity.
Well, that's the whole bottom line here, Barry. Wallace and company have done some rather convenient math. And that math basically doesn't take into account the fact that when you build a bureaucracy to form a welfare state, it tends to skim off large percentages of the taxes that you confiscate in order to redistribute. At one point, someone did a study and said the highest rate of redistribution that comes out of a welfare agency in the federal government at the federal level is about 27%.
Mm-hmm.
And that's considered a marvelously efficient system. 27%. That means that 73% gets chewed up in the bureaucracy, the cost of running the program. Well, we have all these state lawmakers who are lining up to get quote unquote federal dollars. Well, where did those federal dollars come from in the first place?
They came from the taxpayer.
They came from state taxpayers.
That's right.
So basically what the state governments are doing is they've surrendered their 10th Amendment powers and the powers that they did not delegate to the federal government and then saying, oh, please send us some money so that we can continue to redistribute income and buy more votes.
Mm-hmm.
Because bottom line on what this is now, unfortunately, Barry, we're out of time.
Right. And you know, the government does this both by direct taxes and by indirect service fees that they charge.
Right.
And we're going to talk about that more tomorrow.
Yeah, definitely. So join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.